Welcome to the Intersectionality Lab, a fair space to explore intersections.
Hello and welcome. I'm Inga, and today with me co-hosting is Anna Katharina.
Hi.
And today we want to talk about the authority gap. And for the preparation of this podcast episode, we used the book Authority Gap from Mary Ann Seeger. And it basically covers that the tendency of, like, the authority gap is kind of the tendency to underestimate women in general, like in professional life, in personal life, in family, wherever, education, environments and so on. And it's kind of that the authority gap produces like an imbalance and differences in opportunities that cis men and cis women, for now we're just talking about cis men and cis women, we will come back, I will say something later, and that kind of like the gap is producing a difference in the opportunity and possibilities of achievement compared to cis men. And maybe short, when we talk about women and men in this episode, we talk mainly about cis women and cis men. But of course, we acknowledge that the authority gap goes beyond this binary categorization. But I think mainly in this book, they addressed cis men and cis women. So that's the perspective we are taking. Yeah.
Yeah. But I do acknowledge that she wrote good chapters on intersectionality. She had like that, for me was just like chef kiss, basically.
Yeah,
I love the fact that she introduced that. So the first chapters are really like with that binary system, right? But she then like open up in the other chapters.
Yeah
I really loved it. I like this book has a lot to unpack, basically. I was so happy that you suggested to make like an episode on this book. And when I started to read, I was just like, oh my God, we needed this book.
Yeah, it kind of gave background information and named things that, for example, I experienced a lot in life, and also like thinking about a lot of conversations with female friends, they experience the same and in every life situation. So it's kind of the book just gave a frame for it and named it really, really well.
Yeah. I do agree with you. This book, it was actually a good surprise because of that framing. Because in our own conversations, we've been like collecting like information from what we've read from this and this. But this book just like packs it in one space, all of the things that we've been discussing, right?
Yeah.
And yeah. Did you saw yourself in the book?
Yes, that's also something I wanted to ask you, because for me, a lot of the examples, they seem sometimes very exaggerated. And then I thought maybe it's also because it's mainly, I mean, there are some numbers and statistics and studies from other contexts, but mainly it's from the US context. But then I started to think that, for example, me as a psychologist, I've always been in an environment with a lot of female representation, and also maybe different kind of approaches, because all my working profession is mainly with women.
Yeah.
And just a few male colleagues. So I thought also like this is also my bias in this whole situation, because I've never been to environments of economic professions or some financial, like this kind of things. I think I saw myself more in private life in the book.
Yeah. And I've seen myself in both, because I've worked in those environments, especially in journalism, and of course more so. And even when I had other experiences, either in politics or in like other working settings, I did experience some of those things. Yeah, and it was funny to see myself in that regard. Yeah.
Can you name some examples, or like one sample?
The fact that, for example, me being like, for example, in a newsroom as an intern, and ideas being passed and acknowledged if the man says the same thing. I actually had one like in the university. It just pissed me off, because I wrote a piece on disabled athletes, and my professor was actually a reporter in a news TV station. session. And like the next week after he read my work, he basically did a piece on it with a lot of the data that I've like collected. Mm-hmm. for the work, and I was just so pissed. I remember my dad like phoning me when the piece was on air. He was just like, I can't believe they did this to you. Yeah, welcome to my world. And of course I've encountered that on like meetings and in the I've had like a year 2 years of working for a government post also, and also I've seen that sometimes I felt that I had to fight for me to be heard and for my ideas to be heard. So yeah, I did.
Yeah.
And what about you in your personal life?
No, because like while you were talking, it was like true. While I studied, I had one cooperation with one professor of mine, and I helped him with some topics and I did some research for him, but for non-publicational issues. And then at one point, he just told me that he got accepted in a really good paper and he's publishing there. And then in like a side sentence, he was just telling me like, oh yeah, and I also used some research that you did. I was like, okay, but he was not even asking me, for example, if it's okay, or giving me any credits for it. It was just a side sentence and like this treat. But then I was also thinking, is this authority gap, or is it more like because you are in a lower position as a student than a professor at the university, so they don't acknowledge what you're doing?
But you did the work.
Yeah, I did the work. But I don't know if it would be a difference, because the authority gap would be then the difference if I would be a male student, if there would be more acknowledgement or not.
And the question we can ask ourselves is, why didn't we, for example, when I was in the university doing my undergrad, when that happened, I did not go and ask why, and asked for like, because I was like, what's the point, right? I was really young, and we can ask ourselves that.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, also I just saw that, for example, in application processes, that there's a difference between male and female applicants, that they, for example, women tend to apply for a job if the job advertisement fits their profile for like 80% or 75%, even sometimes higher. And for men, it's like if it fits or suits 30-40% of their profile, so they have more confidence in just applying for a job which is not even their profile at all.
And if you cast your mind to your past, can you see some biases being put into you when you were younger? I can see some in my own life.
Yeah, I have to admit that, for example, from my parents' side, they were always, because my father always wanted me to be an engineer, so he never put kind of differences between my brothers and me. And also like in school, I had a really good biology teacher who took me to some student programs for women in STEM subjects and stuff. So I think I never questioned that I could be an engineer or in a male-dominated profession. But from a society part, for sure, that you're more like, yeah.
But I actually had some of my grandmothers stating that some activities that I did were not like fit for girls.
Yeah.
So yeah, like for example, a really simple thing like girls playing card games, that was not fit for a girl, and I was just why?
Yeah, I would say I have it more on the confident side, working or also speaking up in groups sometimes, because as also the book addressed this issue of speaking up without sounding bossy or assertive somehow. And it's more like this, that I always feel like I'm putting something on people, or I'm too much in my opinion, and I'm more like this on this, we have to take care of the group and everyone feels seen and this kind of stuff. Or that I, for example, if I say something or name a fact, I always reassure the source. And I also tend to recognize that I have this tendency of saying, but all my female friends or who are female raised somehow, they're having this like, but I'm not really sure. I just read something, but maybe this is wrong. So kind of they step back on what they just said about saying that I'm not sure. It's just something I read. I don't know the source in the moment. So like this, you always have to name a source or reassure yourself.
I do that also.
Yeah. And then for example, male friends, they never do it. They're like, yep.
So. I think that we have to start questioning him. So where's the source for that?
Yeah.
Like, make them have our standards instead of like the opposite.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or for example, I was in a car with a friend of mine and I had the book, The Authority Gap, with me in the car and I was driving. And basically, because I was started to talk about this book, and I mean, I was in the middle of reading it, so obviously I had more to talk about this book. But he took the position of just explaining me what the book is about because he read the cover page. And then I was like, are you really doing this?
Were you mansplained?
Just like, you know, I'm reading the book and I'm more than halfway through. So maybe I should tell you about the book and not you. And it's just like the few sentences you just read about it. But like this confidence of just doing it. And then I think sometimes they're not even noticing, because then I said like, hey, do you know what you just did? And he was like, oh, yeah, sorry, I didn't notice. Yeah.
One of my questions was, what was the chapter that you loved the most?
Oh, that's a difficult question. Maybe can you go first, because I have to think first.
I have to.
Okay.
I loved all of them, but I love the chapter on trans and women and trans men, and I love the chapter on the psychology framing for toxic masculinity, and of course the solutions. I think that she was brilliant to have like the final chapter on solutions for every area. I think like that was, because we've discussed this in our own private conversations, that okay, we are exploring all of these topics, but maybe we should also introduce some solutions so people won't be overwhelmed with the state of the affair. And she did that brilliantly. So the last chapter, so I think like for me, I loved the book all the way through, but like the chapter on trans women and trans men, and the final two chapters.
Yes. Yeah, I would totally agree that, especially the last chapter, I was not surprised, but like in a good way, that she really gave practical solutions for each environment, for being like for colleagues, for in partnerships, in parenthood, in whatever. So I really, really enjoyed it. And then you can mark it. And I mean, it's also summarizing somehow the whole book, because I mean, that's what she's talking about in the whole book. But then kind of like with this practical, and that's something we can do in society, in politics, and whatever. I really was surprised.
Yeah, she actually at the end of each chapter, she offers you like at least one or two ways of dealing with these subjects and dealing with this stuff. But at the end, like but for me, the one that blew the most my mind was the chapter on trans women and trans men.
Yeah. I mean, I heard this before. There's a really good TED talk about it as well, from a trans woman talking about her experience in being a white cis man until she's, I think, 50, and then decides to, like, did her career and everything, and then decides to transition, and then experience, like, wow, I had a lot of privileges, especially as a cis white man. And then seeing like how all the privileges are taken from you, not all of them, but at least them for being a man.
Do you want to summarize the chapter a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, you can also do it if you want.
No, you can do it.
Okay. So yeah, it's just basically about this experience of trans people that transition and then experience the authority gap, for example, for the first time, or like experiences the disadvantages of being read as a female person from then, and then also experiencing it in professional life as like a gap between, like, for example, not like, of course, of payment and salary, but also then, for example, that they're not taking for granted anymore, or like if they say something something, they're not respected somehow in the way they set their opinion or propose a solution for a problem, or that they just get overtalked a lot more in meetings than they did before. And then also on the other hand, trans men that experience that they have way more space to talk about and people don't question them all the time. They get less comments and whatever. So, yeah.
It was brilliant that that's one of the first chapters that she wrote, because it's, if someone has like a doubt that the authority gap like exists, like
this is
you the... have this like experience, because these people experience both norms, right? And so, and have in them both experiences.
Yes.
It was just like, yes. Just it's not just data, we have people who experience the both of the things.
And it's that we often don't even notice or recognize that we're also contributing to it, and that we are in the whole system of it, and that we are kind of tricked by biases all the time. And so that's what I was also questioning myself while I was reading it, because sometimes I felt a huge resistance to some things, because then I thought like, I mean, in some cases it is like this, but it's not that bad in real life or not in all occasions. But then I was thinking,
can you give an example?
I mean, yeah, I never had an professional experience that someone called overrun my opinion completely with sexist comments in professional life, because luckily so far I had really good experiences in professional life. That, I mean, of course, sometimes your opinion is more valued than other times, but never in this position of that was because I was a woman. And as I said, it's more in this the private life. So no, I can't give an explicit example, because my feeling was sometimes like, it can't be that bad, because why we are accepting it when it is that bad for some people? But then of course it is that bad.
Yeah, so you were reading the book from your own experience point of view. Yeah, that's how biases work, right?
Yeah.
People don't know, but we have like a difference of age, so I'm the older one. So I have a good deal more of like working on myself on these things. But one biases that I can exemplify that I used to had when I was younger was the biases of beautiful women and intelligent women.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Which is also a chapter, right?
Yeah, it's also a chapter, yeah. And I was just, I saw myself on those, making those biases when I was younger. Or if like a woman would dress herself super sexy. So I remember myself when I was younger to question myself. Especially when you work in journalism, looks are so much in the forefront, especially in TV.
Mm-hmm.
In those moments, I had to question myself, because I have this premise. When I meet someone, I want to know the person, not the idea that I have from the person. So I think that was an advantage for me to work on my biases. And so I've ended up meeting like really wonderful women that were highly intelligent and super beautiful. And that was like the path for me to kill that biases, that unconscious biases that I had, and sometimes conscious, right? But yeah, that I was like, I did have that biases.
Yes, for sure. And I was also questioning, because looking back, I think I had more issues being supervised by a woman, or have like that had authority above me, than men. And I always thought maybe I have an issue with women in supervising positions, and I can just work easier with men. But by now I'm just thinking, because it's also like some chapters are about this, like kind of this, why we hate, putting this in quotes, no, why we hate female leadership. And while I was reading it, I was like, no, I'm not against female leadership, and I'm fully supportive about it. But then afterwards, I was thinking like, maybe I do have an issue because of these things that we, for example, take female leadership as something bad, or something, how to say, something, I only remember the German word in the moment. like something bossy or something that is forced on us, kind of.
When we started to work, you felt that way?
I think it's difficult to say because I think I also outgrown it. I had more like in school, I had a lot of problems with female teachers, more problems with female teachers. And then in university, I always collaborated with the male professors, kind of. So I was seeking male supervision because maybe it was my bias of thinking they have more knowledge or more authority. So I don't know. I have to know. But that's also something I took from the book, is that for me, myself, I want to start questioning, for example, what language I'm using to describe a person, even in my head, or like if you talk about a competence of a person, if you have different languages for within the genders, let's you say, for example, you describe male colleagues as more competent, knowledgeable, or hardworking. And then, no, hardworking, I think was a female one. And then, like, for a female, it's like this hardworking, empathetic.
Yeah, for them was more like talent. Yes. He's a genius. He's
Describing females is always like more like this. She's hardworking. She kind of worked for the success she achieved, and so on and so on. So it's interesting. It's really, really interesting.
Which they do, but they are also really talented women.
Yes, of course. Yeah. Of course.
I actually had like a friend of mine telling me that, I don't know if this was an experience that she had or a friend of hers that she had. So they both worked in finance, high finance. And she was telling me that her, it was her friend that her friend was negotiating her severance package. And at the end, the person that she was negotiating was saying to her that she, and this was a woman, that she should not be so aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I was, when she told me this, I just, like, my first question was, if this was a man, would she tell the man that he was aggressive or assertive? Mm-hmm. Right? This is like, actually for me, this is a super interesting boundary between assertiveness and aggressiveness, because sometimes people thought that I was really aggressive because I really was really outspoken.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, so it's an interesting place to be in.
Mm-hmm.
I had people telling me, even like family members, that I should be more soft-spoken, not so prone to give my opinion, because I wouldn't be, and this really pissed me off, I wouldn't be lovable, or wouldn't find like a guy who'd like that, because guys don't like assertive women, or because I came off like aggressive. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, I don't care. Thank God I had the dad that I had, because he was like super proud of me when I spoke my mind on stuff. And I think that helps.
Yeah,
I think like parenthood and the way that people educate young children, and especially women, like giving them the power and valuing, even from a young age, their opinions and their thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's super important.
Yeah.
It's really, really important.
That was also something, I mean, it wasn't something completely new, but it's more, I mean, the book really highlighted and spoke it out, that it's about generational change across a lot of generations. And we have the system still now, and like within the generations, and the people, especially older generation, they won't change, but we have to outgrow this, for example, authority gap, gender pay gap, and whatever discrimination, systemic discrimination, person discrimination we face. And this is kind of, I mean, it makes sense, but for me sometimes it's also quite frustrating, because it's like this, what I want change now, and then accept like the change is slow but consistent if we work on it, kind of. Yeah
I also had to work on that. Now I'm a little bit more chill about it, and I tend to cut myself faster when I'm in that space of mine, like I want the change now.
Mm-hmm.
Because like the longer you live, the more you get to understand, really understand, not only in an intellectual level, that change takes time, and the most effective change that you can have is through education, mm-hmm. and through dialogue, productive dialogue, and that takes time basically. Mm-hmm. And the fact that you cannot see it in the immediate sometimes is frustrating. So I need to do some kind of like internal work, yep, to get my eyesight like on the goal again. Yep. But I do understand you, especially for us that we do this kind of work, right? Sometimes it can be a little bit frustrating. I do understand you.
But then I also, because I mean, the book is also sometimes giving kind of examples for strategies to cope with the authority gap in different environments. And first I thought like, I mean, it's really good, but then I also felt this resistance of mine, because for example, there was also the suggestion of, for example, don't try to take male characteristics or that ones that are perceived male, and for example, cover or like present your competence with warmth, because it's something female, like a female expected characteristic, and this is more, it aligns then more with the expectation, so it's not questioned and it doesn't take the energy that it's questioned and something that is not aligned with what is expected. But then I was also like, no, I really don't want to adapt, just to take that I'm taking seriously, just like, okay, yeah, warmth is something female, but if I'm not a warm person, I don't want to cope with this, that they kind of see me as a competent person. So I was more like this, I don't want to say fuck off, but I was just like, no, I'm not going into this structure again. And I think this is the only or one critique I would have on the book, is that sometimes, I mean, it gives you kind of survival strategies within the system, which is good, but then sometimes I miss this, but how we step out of it, and because I mean, clearly the system is not how it should be, or it's not working for most of the people. So and then I was like, but how we disrupt this, the whole system. So but this is something maybe.
Yeah, I do agree with you. That was I think it was the only thing that I was just like, why does the burden have to be on me, mm-hmm. to change like this characteristic, right? And but at the same time I understood that this is a strategy, mm-hmm. basically. But I think it can be really energy draining for a person.
Yeah. And then
I do agree.
Also, for example, when we talk about identities or like characteristic that comes into place, for example, then if, I mean, we are talking from a kind of a white positioned perspective, and I mean, of course we experience authority gap, but then for example if you have a non-normative sexuality or whatsoever, it,
or a black person or a disabled person,
that's why
it would be great if we could do like an episode with all of those voices.
Yes.
It would be beautiful.
Yes.
Because like we don't have the experience, the lived experience from those people, and I don't feel comfortable talking for them. I think it would be great to give them space so they can explain their own experiences with the authority gap on those in these settings.
Yes.
But it was beautiful for me. It was, everybody knows I'm a huge proponent of the intersectionality methodology. It was beautiful for me to see that in play in some of the chapters, and she acknowledging that this exists, like class, mm-hmm. race, disability, sexual orientation, everything, right? It was really beautiful. It was like a complete work. For me, it was a complete work.
Yeah. Maybe I have one strategy I want to share, because I really like the strategy and you can use it for all over your life. It was the amplification strategy. When one woman made a good point or did a good comment, the other one would repeat it to credit her, and also to kind of assure that no man in the room can take the credit for the same idea in restating it, and also pay more attention to what was just said. And I mean, for me, I just was like, yeah, this is a really good strategy, because I mean, you will sense that it will happen in different places, and you can just use it as like just credit other people.
Yeah, that's a really good one. The other one that I like, and that we from the ground up in Young Educators always used, was every time that we got a CV, if it was between a man and a woman and they have the same qualifications, we would opt for the women. Because yeah. And we've built a wonderful team around that principle, and yeah, but
yeah,
we do have to give a legs up for everybody, basically. Yeah,
yeah.
Do you want to like talk
yes
more about other chapters? Or
I think I already made my important points. Maybe I just have one point, because you were just saying that in application process, and then you have the tendency to say, like, if they have the same qualification, we go for the female applicant. I was surprised about how different groups or like grouping shapes the decisions of, for example, HR. That, for example, if you have a application process and you group four small groups with each is for with each four participants, and then there's always one woman in each small group, they tend to have less of a chance to get hired than if you have two women in a group, for example, from the applicants. And then like there were so many different groupings, and it kind of influenced a lot the decisions people made.
Yeah,
this is something that really surprised me, that it's super sensitive in a way.
More or less it's in the same idea that, for example, I have sometimes I have this discussion with some of my friends that especially with like the government, the Portuguese government from the previous election, we had like more women, we had like black women in the government body, we had LGBTQ plus members in the government, etc., etc. And like the whole point of some of my friends that we were so advanced that this was a non-issue because we had at least one person in government. And like this argument always rubbed me off, because I was just like, until you have like a 50-50 split between men and women and more people of color in government and in parliament and more representation from disabled people and LGBTQ plus people, like you can't make the claim that we are an egalitarian like society or even government. So for me, people don't like quotas, but because they tend to think on a meritocracy base, and I'm just like, I'm pro quotas, because until you normalize having a 50-50 split and between men and women and white people and black people or other minorities, you won't have a chance for a meritocracy society, right? So you need to give the leg up to other people, and with that you do it through quotas. And that experience from the HR, it's a little bit like that. So you have different groups, you just like rearrange things differently and then evaluate things differently, right?
I totally agree. And it's also always this belief of it's kind of a threat to every male employee, for example, or anything. It's more like to set a more equal chance for everyone to get hired or to get whatever in whichever position. And it's more like this, it's more like a collaborative approach, and not we are opposing something and something, it's not that women take over or whatever. It's more like this, okay, let's have a fair share and see where we get from there.
Yeah. This book has a lot really to unpack. For example, we could even have like a whole book only on the chapter that does the analysis behind toxic masculinity. That was a really eye-opening to me. So how things like in the mind of people work, and how education enters in that. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, maybe this can also be the introduction to the last segments. But I mean, I've brought something else. But she also, the author, Marianne Seacart, also wrote The Invisible Woman, which is from a few, I don't know if you read it, but it's also when I was reading, and it was really like, this whole society is built for men and not for women, even in building structures and whatever, and pathways. So it was quite shocking. Yeah, but maybe we can, if you don't have anything else you want to share,
okay.
We can go to the last segment of Connect and Reflect. And do you want to start with what you brought?
Yeah, so my suggestion for this episode, it's the wonderful book On Women by Susan Sontag.
Mm-hmm.
It's basically a collection of essays that she wrote on women. And I would especially ask you to pay attention to the double standard of aging that she wrote in 1972, that is like completely on point with the book, and A Woman's Beauty Puts Down or Power Source from 1975. I'm a huge fan of Susan Sontag's. I may not agree with everything that she wrote on this book because it was from like a 70s perspective, so you see some dated informations, but in the whole the book is really interesting to see it from a cultural perspective and written beautifully from one of the most prolific writers that we had, Susan Sontag. And what about you?
I brought, because I actually accidentally watched it this weekend, the movie She Said. I think you recommended me already like a while ago, but it's directed by Maria Schrader, and it's about the journalist who uncovered the whole assault and abuse about Harvey Weinstein. And within this movie, because I prepared for this episode and then I watched it and was like, there are a lot of examples for the authority gap, like small examples, but I mean also very big examples of, for example, the journalists are two women researching this whole stories, but Harvey Weinstein in the movie is just communicating with the only male journalist in the room always, and he's always stating, going to him, however the women are doing the whole research job and doing the main jobs about research about this topic. So I really, really liked it. I got super angry watching this movie, but then also like super encouraged of like, yeah, we have to step up. We have to take our positions and take space and not stepping back and giving too much space. But I just want to say, I mean, there's a lot of, it's about sexual assault and abuse and also gendered violence. So maybe it's not for everyone watching it, but yeah, I can just really, I saw a lot of examples just perfectly portrayed.
Yeah, I like that idea for us to take space. Yeah. Take space, make space, and give space. Yeah.
Share space. Yes.
Yes, and share space.
Yeah. So if you don't have anything you want to share.
No, I'm good. I just, this book, I highly recommend it. If you can get your hands on the book, please read it. Gift it to other women and to men.
Especially to men.
It's super important. Yes. Especially to men.
Yes. And I mean, you can see the book also as a really good starting point, because I mean, even though there are some examples, it's still written from a very binary perspective, but it's like the starting point of the very obvious. And then if you think more into death, it's more about this, but it's everywhere and it's affecting everyone that is not a cis man. So I totally agree. It's a really nice book. And yeah, I think that's it for today. And thanks you for listening to the Intersectionality Lab podcast. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Intersectionality Lab. If some terms or topics made you curious, check out our website. Maybe some of the resources will keep your thoughts rolling. Meet us where the lines cross. We are a non-profit research center working on human rights, gender equality, and active citizenship. And this podcast was created with the support of our team.